Welcome to the Crude Life Media Network podcast. My name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist, and on today's episode, we talk with Derek Broughton with Baumstark Broughton Law Offices about eminent domain, pipelines, and water rights, plus much, much more. In just a moment, our interview with Jared Wirtz. But first, I want to take a moment to remind you good folks to please support our sponsors. They literally keep the lights on.
Derek Broughton, partner at Baumstark Broughton Law Partners in Bismarck, North Dakota. Our firm primarily represents landowners on landowner issues, and we have represented landowners who have been impacted by WAS and really just by pipelines and that kind of development in general, both with respect to negotiating easements and eminent domain actions.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. And, you know, I mean, for me, whenever I hear the word eminent domain, I always think of the railroad, you know, the original big bad wolf, if you will, which I didn't say that. I guess that was a term coined a long time ago. You know, where they come through and they argue it's for the better good and everything like that. Is that kind of the idea with the pipelines, is that it's for the greater good type of an eminent domain?
To some extent, yes. The legal test for eminent domain is that it has to be for a public purpose, or in other words, have a public benefit. But it has to be a public use. And so with pipelines, some of the larger interstate oil and gas pipelines, the justification for the use of eminent domain is because they're considered a common carrier. So it would be similar to Amtrak or Greyhound buses or something like that. I would take issue with that in some circumstances with respect to some of the pipelines. With WAS, I think it's a little bit different because the idea is more related to there being a public utility, so it's more along the lines of, you know, we allow the use of eminent domain to run, you know, power lines, things like that, and so this is the just running water lines to get rural water out to people. I think some of the concern that I've heard from landowners comes from the fact that at this point, a lot of this water is being run to well sites for oil and gas production and not to get folks in the country rural water anymore.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because as you were talking, the only thing that entered my mind was, boy, this is a gray area, sticky situation. Because one of the things that I've uncovered doing this feature on WAS and how it's impacted the oil industry is that the municipal demand for water is less than the demand for industrial water in some cases, or they're at least extremely close. So when I see something like that, that says we've gone beyond the original intent of this was supposed to be for the, you know, the citizens and the public, to where they've almost flipped the switch and said, you know what, we're going to be a business now. And now that we've already got the funding and everything's going ahead, we're going to be a business now. And that I'm still trying to understand this whole thing. Is that kind of where you're coming from, is that the eminent domain is not being used as much for public good as it is for almost like business-like practices?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is my opinion, but I feel the same about the use of eminent domain for, you know, running electricity, for example. Certainly to get that out to folks in rural areas and so forth, I understand the idea of needing to run this transmission facilities, but what I'm seeing recently, the last 5 to 10 years, really the last 5 years, is the use of eminent domain to help the oil and gas industry. And, you know, you can make an argument that that's for the greater good because we're all driving cars and so forth, but there's a line there where you can still make an argument that it's for the greater good, but that doesn't mean you should be using what I consider a pretty serious exercise of the state's power, meaning using eminent domain to actually take land from people for the greater good. That's a step beyond just saying that something is for the greater good when you're actually going to use the state's power to
That creates a level of uncertainty throughout the entire state, in my opinion, when you can just maneuver and massage and change things to where you're essentially using state force. You're using, you know, a government force in order to do things, because primarily that's what eminent domain is by definition. Are you seeing, is this becoming more commonplace that you're seeing in the state? I mean, you're out of Bismarck, so you probably see it more than I do. This type of forceful government action, I guess, into particular industries?
Yeah, I do. And particularly the use of what they call quick take eminent domain. And this is just me being up on my soapbox, but I don't think that quick take eminent domain should exist, period, unless it's an absolute emergency. And I think that's being overused and abused. And my problem with the process is that, you know, we have one landowner, former state legislator, who's been very vocal about this, and his first notice that his land had been taken via eminent domain was when they showed up with heavy equipment on his property. And so I guess, yeah, I'll leave it at that, but I'm seeing more of it, and particularly with the use of quick take. It's such an easy, cheap process for laws or for others that I think there, it creates this perverse incentive to just use it because it's easier than talking to the landowner.
You know, the one thing that I've interviewed quite a few people on the Western Area Water Supply, WAS, and it seems like a big part of the issue outside of the eminent domain, which I've just learned about, is that there's uncertainty because they're switching their model on the fly, you know, which is very unusual and difficult to do for a business unless you're being subsidized and have, you know, support from the state. I mean, to go back to your investors or the bank and say, we're going to do a completely new model that we had before, or we're going to do this, it's not that easy to do. And so when I see that when you can switch a model, get it approved and fast-tracked through the use of the state, I see where that creates a lot of uncertainty and, I'll be quite honest, disdain towards the WAS, for example. When I interviewed Jared Wirtz, the executive director, the first question I asked him, his response was that this has been controversial from the start. And I went, oh, okay, well, this is, I see it's that much of an issue. It's that much of a hot button type of an issue out in Western North Dakota. Talk to me a little bit about that in terms of your reaction to what I said as far as being able to change your business model and use accessibility and the government intervention to do so, as opposed to going back to investors or anything like that. Do you have any comments on that?
I think so. It's probably more of what I've already said, but you kind of brought this up earlier, and I agree with the perspective that it appears to me that eminent domain is being used not the way it was intended, but because you basically have businesses using it, you have private parties using it, and so WAS is deemed a government institution or a government instrumentality, but it's not being run that way, and it's making a ton of money and being heavily subsidized. And I have the same issue, for example, when you have, you know, Enbridge, for example, was running a pipeline through the state, the Sandpiper line, and they ended up pulling the plug, but we're talking about a Canadian corporation that's using the power of the state of North Dakota to take land from North Dakota landowners, and I just have a real issue with that. It's not that I am opposed to a pipeline. I recognize that we need to get oil from point A to point B, and that's fine. My problem is when you have private business using the power to take property rights from individuals in order to conduct their business.
Do you think it's going to continue? Do you think North Dakota will use the power to capture more market share for, and I'm specifically talking about the water industry here, and if, do you see any change of that? Do you see any ability for WAS to, I guess, not use these forceful tactics, or do you think that they've gotten themselves to the point to where they don't have a lot of options left?
I think they do have options. I think the options are to work with the landowners and negotiate. And, you know, there are every once in a while a couple landowners who are just done. They're just not going to allow it. But what that usually means is a fairly minor reroute of a pipeline. And I don't know. I think that the state legislature, they made some steps with respect to water resource boards this session, but there was a proposed amendment to put some checks on the abuse of eminent domain by WAS, and they rejected that and didn't do it. And I don't understand that, but what I'm hearing as an attorney that works for landowners is that the landowners are getting more and more angry about eminent domain abuse. And I know in Wyoming, you know, Wyoming is light years ahead of us, and I think it's partly a cultural thing where the landowners in Wyoming got a lot angrier a lot faster about eminent domain abuse, and their legislature adopted some changes and reeled it in and put some checks on eminent domain abuse. So I think that if the state legislature doesn't step in, it's going to get worse, and now we're probably going to have to wait another 2 years and see how much worse it gets. And hopefully in 2 years they'll do something significant. But I have a feeling that this is going, as Mr. Wirtz put it, this was already controversial. I think it's going to get more and more controversial. And it may be that there are some changes that occur through the court system as these things happen. I do think the Supreme Court is going to be seeing more eminent domain cases in the near future. But my hope is that the legislature takes this seriously next session and does something serious about it.
What do you want to see done with eminent domain?
I want to get rid of the entire idea of quick take unless it is truly an emergency. You know, if you've got, you know, a potential flood or an emergency like that, you know, Hurricane Katrina example, I understand there are needs where you've just got the government, in order to help people, might just need to change property rights or do that. But I don't see an oil company needing to save some money as the kind of emergency that should allow for quick take authority. So I think we get rid of quick take to a large extent. I also think that, you know, we have in state court, the landowner being sued usually is able to recover attorney's fees, and I think that's one of the best laws we have on the books. But I also think that the way the appraisers value pipelines and transmission lines and so forth, I mean, I've had appraisers who literally will say that there's no damage to the landowner, and it's a problem with their appraisal methodology. And so we've got to have some reform, and there was a bill that was being pushed this session that was literally the exact law in Wyoming. It's been on the books there for 10 years, and it provides, you know, some additional methodology beyond the traditional appraisal methodology for valuing damages. I think that needs to happen because one of the reasons that eminent domain is abused is the companies, you know, I've had companies, for example, who will be offering $40,000 for an easement, but when they go into eminent domain, their damage model is that it's only $2,000. And so the amounts being paid for a private easement are, you know, 40 times what people are actually getting in an eminent domain proceeding. And I see that as a serious issue. And I think if it weren't, as I put before, so easy and so cheap for companies to use eminent domain, it wouldn't look so appealing to them.
Do you get much into water rights?
I do. I mean, we do water law, again, for landowners. So that's, water rights is pretty broad. Kind of depends on what you're referring to specifically.
Sure. I guess I was talking a little bit about, you know, when it comes to, you know, the landowners, what rights do they have with their water? And secondly, How about the municipalities when it comes to the water rights? Do you have opinions on any of those things?
To some extent, I have concerns about the level of the aquifers and how much water we're using, and you know, we're a prior appropriation state, so basically first one to use the water has the rights to the water. I think that, you know, to the extent I have concerns about it, it's with access for agriculture and ensuring that we have a present and future supply of water sufficient for agricultural production, and that we're not putting that at risk for temporary industrial use. And particularly because a lot of the times when the, you know, when a farmer is using water going back into the system, a lot of times with oil production, once that water is used, it's going to get pumped down into a deep formation and it's out of the system permanently.
And then kind of wrapping up here, just a couple more questions left with Derek Broughton. And what's the name of your law firm again?
It's Bomstark Broughton Law Partners.
And that's out of Bismarck, North Dakota. Do you guys have any other offices?
No, we don't. We had a satellite office out of Billings, Montana, and we still do a fair amount of work in Montana, South Dakota, and Minnesota.
Okay. You mentioned about the oil industry subsidizing, that sort of thing. And I did have one of the questions I was going to ask you that I didn't know if it would come up, but I see it kind of has a little bit where some people have said to me that the state of North Dakota is subsidizing the oil industry through the Western Area Water Authority. Do these people have any truth behind that, or does that hold water at all, or is that just flat out wrong?
I think it is. I mean, the WAS gets a lot of money from the state for these development projects, and they're developing an entire water supply infrastructure for what is a temporary, I mean, in the long run, this is a temporary extraction industry. And so the state is basically building this large infrastructure to supply water to an extraction industry that is going to be here on a temporary basis, no matter what anyone says. We all like to think that the boom's never going to go away, but it did, and so is this production at some point.
That's interesting you brought that up, because one of the things that I try to bring up on my program is this Bakken boom is a little bit different than the past. And the only reason I say that is because they have figured out a way to drill 800,000 to 1.2 million barrels a day around $50, which is great, which is outstanding. But yeah, it does not bring in that economic development like it did with $100 oil. And if you go back to the 1990s, that was a decade of low oil prices. And then when people say, oh, it's cyclical, it'll come back, that's like fingers on the chalkboard to me, because let's explore that. 1950, 1980, 2010, that means the next boom is going to be 2040. And so when I hear these things and start looking at the historicals, it does concern me a little bit that I do remember in my lifetime 10, 12 years of low oil prices. So if we have, you know, say a decade of low oil prices, have you guys looked into at all how that might affect, say, you know, WAS?
No, I haven't. I think that's a really good question, though.
Yeah, I know. I hate being the buzzkill at times. It's not fun, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I appreciate the time today. And I always like to give guests the final word, whatever direction they want to go, whatever they want to talk about. So anything that you think we left out, anything you want to reemphasize, anything that you want to add in there. So go ahead. The floor is yours.
Sure. I'll never pass up an opportunity to get on my soapbox. So I think that, you know, the issues with WAS are, to me, part and parcel of some larger issues and policy choices we need to make in North Dakota. And the way I see it as an attorney for landowners is that the farmers and ranchers were here 100 years ago living in sod houses. They're going to be here 100 years from now, and they're going to be doing what they're doing. And while the income from extraction industries like coal and oil can be a blessing for some people, I think that the primary policy decisions made in this state and in other states need to be to put the farmers first and support agriculture first above all else, and protect the long-term sustainability of the land that always needs to be made a priority over our temporary extraction industries.
And that was Derek Broughton of Baumstark Broughton Law Offices out of Bismarck, North Dakota. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. We're also on social media. Please check out and like our Facebook and Twitter pages. And I'd like to take this opportunity once again to thank our fine sponsors for supporting the Crude Life Media Network. Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching. Go to coachingwithhatch.com for more information, or go ahead and send me an email at jason@thecrudelife.com, and I will personally make sure that Eric Hatch gets your email. That's Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching, coachingwithhatch.com. Also, MBI Energy Services. For more information about MBI Energy Services or to check out their latest job openings, visit their website, www.mbienergyservices.com. That's MBI Energy Services. That's it for this episode. Till next time, be happy, and remember, sometimes life can be crude. We'll see you next time, folks.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.